Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to week 5 of the Take the Points podcast. I am Tom Zalesnok, and I'm here via Skype with Dan Partridge and Ryan Spillett. Gentlemen, say hello.
Hello.
Welcome back, guys.
We are going to start by recapping week 4. I'll name some of the scores quickly, but before we really recap it, we have something much more important to do. So just in case you missed some of the scores, we have Tennessee 38, Florida 28, first win for Tennessee in 11 years. Wisconsin beat down Michigan State 30-6. A&M, they had a nice win over Arkansas 45-24. They're becoming now, I guess you would say, the challenger to Alabama in the SEC West. Ole Miss 45-14 over Georgia. That's a pretty big win for Ole Miss, and I would say a pretty disappointing loss for the Kirby Smart era and for people who thought Georgia was going to improve. Utah 31, USC 27. Spillett, you called that one. Pretty big blow, I would say, to the USC program, even though Utah's good. And Baylor we'll mention in a second, but first we have to start with the most important outcome of the week. Auburn 18, LSU 13. The game itself was predicted right here on last week's Take the Point podcast as a loser leaves town match. We said that the losing coach would be fired. What we did not know is that it would happen the day after the game. So yep. I'd like to begin with a Dan Partridge very special tribute to the late, great Les Miles. Dan, I've got some music for you. Take it away.
Oh, beautiful choice, Tom. Les Miles, wow, there's so many great memories. You know what? I'm only going to really focus on his 2005 beginnings at LSU on all the great memories over the years. It's really hard to concentrate with that music, but I'm going to power through.
Okay, I'll turn it down a little.
No. All good. Keep playing it. So anyway, Les takes over 2005. LSU takes over for Nick Saban. He has a loaded team, excited to start the year. A couple days before his first game as head coach, what happens? Hurricane Katrina hits New Orleans and throws a wrench into his beginning. And ever since then, it's been a crazy time for Les. So many great memories. He's taken me from being a middle 20s post-college idiot to mid-30s idiot, I guess, in a different way. But I'd like to personally thank Les for so many great memories. Just want to recap a couple things. 2007 national title over the Ohio State University. Going into the last week of the regular season, LSU was ranked, I believe, fourth or third, and they needed losses by both Missouri and West Virginia. They got both to play the national title game, and they took care of business. Had a couple weird years in between there. Still sent a lot of guys to the NFL. And then the 2011 team was absolutely amazing. 13-0, perfect regular season. 8 wins over ranked teams, including the eventual Pac-12 and Big East conference champions in Oregon and West Virginia. They beat Alabama once in the regular season, and then in the national title game, they'll always be remembered for having the worst offensive performance you could possibly have. And things really weren't the same after that. Ever since he made that decision to start Jordan Jefferson in that game over Jarrett Lee, Jarrett Lee threw for 15 touchdowns that year, 3 picks. And that just always haunted him, and he never really got past it. But hats off to Les. Right now, there's 42 NFL players from LSU playing right now. That's an unbelievable amount when you really think that there's only, 56 on a team or 50, whatever it is?
3.
So there's almost like a whole team of LSU, and that makes up one team in the NFL, which is mind-boggling. I mean, how many colleges have football in various years and players that are 40 years old and 21? So that just shows you the amount of absolute talent that he was able to, A, recruit, and, B, also enhance with his coaching. and also some of his great coaches, Mike Gundy, Jimbo Fisher, Mr. Pelini. Oh, wait, never mind. Mike Gundy, just Jimbo Fisher, only those two. Those are his great assistants. But hats off to you, Les. So many great quotes. I'm not going to read through. You know, there's so many articles online, top 10 Les quotes. I'll just give you one. And this is Les to a T. When I wake up in the morning and I turn that film on, it's like reading a book and it's exciting. I don't read books, except if I read books, it would be like reading a book. There's so many things going on there in that sentence that we don't have time to break down because we like to pick games. But that's the kind of insight you can get from Les Miles. I remember they asked him right before the national title game if he was interested in the Michigan coaching job, which is like such an asshole move by a reporter. But he gave him a great response where he's just like, I'm the head coach here, and I got a really good, fine group of men. They're going to go play a hard game. I got to go. Like, so honest and to the point. I don't think that guy is able to like really be evil and lie about something like horrible. But anyway, Les, you were awesome. I'm so excited to see where you go next. You can pretty much coach anywhere you want. Don't listen to the haters. You're the man. Miss you already.
A beautiful, stirring tribute by Dan Partridge with an assist from Sarah McLaughlin and the dog murder music.
Oh.
I don't know if you have that out in Phoenix, but in New York City, there's a commercial where they just show abused dogs to set to Sarah McLaughlin. It's like the most disturbing thing you'll ever see on TV.
Yeah, Comedy Central Late Night. It's always on.
That's a nationwide commercial at this point. It goes on for like 3 minutes too. It's not 30 seconds. It's like the whole commercial break sometimes. It's not good.
So transitioning from that into a segment we do every once in a while, we call it Great Moments in Gambling History. And we had a very rare, not unprecedented, but few precedents for this. We had two great moments in gambling history. People will remember last season we did this for the BYU had a couple of Hail Marys in back-to-back weeks that covered games, which was amazing. But it's rare to see two of these games in the same week. And Ryan Spillett's going to start off by talking about Arizona State and their amazing, amazing cover.
Yes, absolutely. And I will gladly fill in the blanks for you East Coasters who did not see this at 2:45 a.m. Eastern time. So a quick recap. We talked about it last week that 83.5, 84 was the over-under. I believe we all kind of agreed that it was a total coin flip. That number seemed basically dead on. Weren't really confident in it. I was the only one that really loved it. So that game, sitting at 84 exactly, with 1 minute left, Cal goes for an onsides kick, and ASU, instead of just recovering the ball and taking a knee and falling down, he decides to just run the thing back. Touchdown, over, ball game. Amazing. Just, it's so rare that you see an onside kick and then to see a guy actually recover it on the fly and run down the field and score a touchdown for the over. Awesome.
And I will add to that, our second great, great moment in gambling history occurred in another West Coast game. This one wrapped up a little earlier, so I was able to see the ending. I had Stanford -3. Stanford performed very poorly against UCLA, was losing the entire game. Right around the end of the game with a couple minutes left, McCaffrey punches one in and they go up by 3 points, 16-13. And so I'm thinking, all right, at least I push that one. I'll take my money and I'll go home. But what happens? A fumble on the last play. I think Rosen was dropping back to throw a Hail Mary. He fumbles. Stanford picks it up. The camera isn't even paying attention. And next thing you know, it's like shaky camera trying to find the ball. And a Stanford guy is running it back into the end zone. 6 points. Amazing last second, 0 second cover by Stanford. Reminded me of the Ohio State Northwestern game from a few years ago where Ohio State scored a cheesy last second fumble touchdown to cover.
Yeah, I remember that.
But I had Northwestern in this game, and this time I was on the winning side. So great, great moment. Moving along to another game. Now, we don't like to cast aspersions on our fellow hosts here, but Mr. Dan Partridge came out pretty strong last week, and he said that Oklahoma State was going to win against Baylor straight up. He said that the Baylor program was pretty much done. Dan, the Baylor representatives called me and they left a message. They said this one's for Dan Partridge. They wanted me to play it. So I'm going to play it on the air here. Here it is. This is from the Baylor Athletic Department to Dan Partridge. They had to cut it off there. My machine ran out of time. Dan, you've disrespected the Baylor program, which is still going strong.
I have, and this is what I get for wagering against Baylor. It pretty much comes down to bad karma, but I'd like to say one thing. I don't think I've ever won a wager in which I've put on a game and then there's a lightning or rain delay in my entire life. Ever. I'm like 0-38, and I'm not even exaggerating, maybe a little bit, but so that sucked too. Let me just talk about some nonsense that happened in that game. Tied at 21. Baylor scores and go 28-21. Oklahoma State is third and goal on the next drive at the 5-yard line. They hand it off for 2 yards. The announcer said, okay, well, that makes sense because Mike Gundy's going to go for it here on fourth, and he boots a 20-yard field goal. You don't kick 20-yard field goals against Baylor. It's never – it might as well – it's a total waste of time. Later in the game, Baylor had to have a 3rd and 16 for a cover. Sorry, 3rd and goal from the 16. They had a touchdown pass on that. Oklahoma State had a fumble on the half-yard line, down 4 points in the fourth quarter. Every bad break possible went my way for betting against Baylor, and that's what I get. So I'm pissed still 5 days later.
We'll get to Baylor when we do the lines, but I'm interested to hear if your opinion has changed and if you think that they're a team to reckon with. I kind of like them this week, but that's a little spoiler. Maybe not.
Wow.
We'll save that. I want to get into the lines now, unless either of you has anything else you want to say about last week.
All right,
we're not quite as good as last week. Last week had a lot of great games, but what we do have this week is three top 10 matchups, which is pretty rare. So we've got a bunch of good ones. We start on Thursday in a game that is not a top 10 matchup. You have the mighty UConn Huskies going to Houston. Only one team has beaten Houston in the Tom Herman era, Dan, and that is the Huskies. Will your alma mater do it again?
No, but this is what UConn does. Like, they will have like one big win in different sports against the team just to hold over them and then lose some other games that no one will remember, including this one. Houston minus 29, over under 50. So they are asking you to take Houston and the over and hook it. Like, that's so scary because of that. That being said, I think the only bet I'll make is Houston minus 17 first half, and that'll be it.
Ryan, you're on the Houston bandwagon. What do you think?
Shut out.
Yeah.
If you can find a prop for shutout, bet that. That's my best bet for that game. They ain't scoring. They might not cross the 50.
You think this will be reminiscent of, speaking of Mr. Les Miles, the LSU championship game where they never crossed into Alabama territory?
This is just going to be like Alabama against everybody they play that's not in the FBS. It's just going to go. It's going to end 48-0 or 51-0. It's just move along.
Yep. It's going to be like Alabama's game this week.
Well, Dan, I don't want to ruin it, but stay tuned for that. It might be very much like an Alabama game coming up very soon.
Yeah. Like in 4 days.
I am annoyed that this game is on a Thursday night. Kansas at Texas Tech. We had a Texas Tech layoff. Texas Tech overs have been the sure bet of the year. This one is over under 81. Kansas, as we know, is just a dumpster fire of a team. For me, I would lean the line in this one. It's 28.5 currently, especially if you could get it down a point. You know, I doubt that any money ever goes on Kansas, so most likely it'll just go up. But I think Texas Tech crushes them, and we know they can score a lot of points. And I don't, although I do think Texas Tech could hang 70 on Kansas, I'm not sure Kansas can put up more than 3 to 10 points. So it's possible you could see one team score 70 and still get the under, which would be impressive. Thoughts?
It's very possible. Yeah, absolutely. I would not be shocked if this game was like 63-6 or something like that, or who knows? It's weird. But honestly, for me Thursday, I'm betting first half Houston. I'm betting first half Texas Tech, and you're not losing both. There's no way you're going 0-2. I probably jinxed it right there, but I really don't think you're going 0-2. I think at worst you're going 1-1, and I mean, I'll lay 17, and it's going to be 17-17. So great, let's go.
I think Vegas has caught on to Texas Tech. We might have ruined it in the last podcast when we did the moment of silence for Texas Tech. Their overs have been a sure thing the first few weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean, what can you do? We talk about this every year. There's a first month of the season where they don't adjust on one or two teams, and we spotted them this year. It was Cal and Texas Tech, and it was easy. And the easiest of all was Cal Texas Tech, which was the culmination of all the points, and we should have just bet it all, and it was 120 whatever points scored, you know, whatever. Moral of the story, same thing next year. We'll identify the two crazy over teams and hammer them in September, then they'll adjust and we'll pick our spots.
Well, here's the thing. We mentioned this, I think, a couple weeks ago, but Vegas is hesitant to make over-unders higher than, I mean, 81's pretty high. We saw an 84.5 last week. What is the highest over-under you've ever seen? Maybe high 80s, 89, I think, maybe?
Does live betting
I think
count?
Texas Tech Baylor, well, no, live betting does not count. Texas Tech Baylor last year, I think, was like 89. But the point is, I think there's at least 2 to 3 games where Texas Tech could be in a 90-100 point shootout this year. So even though we're going to see some 85 point lines, I still think there's going to be 2 to 3 weeks where big opportunity, including Oklahoma State, Baylor. I think there'll be some chances with this team later in the year, but you're right. The maximum value was in the first 3 weeks and that is over. So we'll see. Right. We'll see if Vegas sets some new record highs. Moving along, Friday, September 30th, first top 10 matchup of the week, Stanford at Washington. Washington is a 3-point favorite. They're the home team. That basically means it's an even game. This is number 6 versus number 9. This is a tough one. Washington has been crushing people, but hasn't really faced the level of competition that Stanford has played. Stanford, meanwhile, has looked a little sluggish, but they get wins over solid teams. So, Ryan, why don't you take this one?
All right. Thank you. This is a game that I definitely am excited for. I think this is a game that is really going to show a lot about where Washington is in the Chris Peterson era. For those of you who don't remember, he was the Boise coach for years and years, and now he's at Washington. Here's the really interesting thing about Stanford. They have not played any FCS teams. They've only played FBS legitimate real teams. They have yet to give up more than 13 points in a game. 13. As we just spoke about 90-100 point over-unders, they have yet to give up over 13 points. Something's got to give in this game. Washington's putting up like 50 a game. So I think this is the McCaffrey Heisman breakout. Don't forget about me game. We get Lamar. We get Greg Ward on Thursday. You get Lamar in a huge game Saturday. This is McCaffrey's game. He hasn't done it yet. We still haven't seen that 300 all-purpose yard game, and he's ready for one. This might be it. I like Stanford.
It's really interesting. Stanford's plus 107 on the money line, which is crazy to me. It's really tough. It's because of the home field. Washington hasn't had a big home game this important in, what, 15 years? 10 years? I mean, time goes by fast.
You could argue not 20? Since maybe like the 91 season.
I know, seriously. So that's why, you know, it's a 3-point spread and not closer to one or a pick-em or something like that. So I think this is a stay-away game. Just watch. It's a college football fan. Enjoy. It'll be good.
I think I'm staying away as well. We just don't know. You both sort of nailed it. We don't know enough about these teams at this point to judge how they'll play against this specific opponent. So we've seen a good deal from Stanford, but we don't know how they'll handle this high-powered Washington offense. And from Washington, we really haven't seen anything. So they're the real wild card. So stay away and enjoy it. That's a Friday night. Those Washington kids are going to be wasted. They're going to be out there in full force.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy. Moving along to the antithesis of that game, we're now in Saturday, September 31st. Let's kick things off with a little Northwestern at Iowa, -13, 9:45 a.m. kickoff. Doris Burke will be announcing solo. Neither of those things are true, but just Doris Burke, nobody else.
Wow.
The reason I put this on here, so Northwestern has looked, they've been losing, but they've been losing close, and they kept it pretty close with Nebraska. They lost by 11, but it was a little bit closer than that score indicates. Iowa, meanwhile, just an absolute terrible performance against Rutgers. Just terrible. I mean, they're coming off the loss against North Dakota State. So you think they've got to come in and they've got to smash Rutgers. They win 14-7 against one of the top five worst schools in the country. So, Iowa, I am declaring you cannot bet them the rest of the year. If you're a take the points listener and you value our opinion, if you value me and respect me as a human being, you will not bet Iowa the rest of the year. You can stay away. I actually kind of like Northwestern with the points in this one. I know you guys don't care, so let's move along.
That's correct. Wait, I just woke up. I forgot there was anyone else besides Wisconsin and Ohio State in the Big Ten. Oh, Michigan too. That's it.
Notre Dame and Syracuse. Neutral site. Interesting neutral site. This is at the Meadowlands, of course. Syracuse ostensibly is the home team, but I think Notre Dame actually has more fans in New York City than Syracuse. When I lived in New York, to me, it seemed like Notre Dame and Michigan are really the home teams of New York City. Penn State being third and Syracuse maybe fourth. Anybody? Notre Dame looks like shit this year.
Yeah, Notre Dame looks bad and the spread's only 10, which is so crazy to me. Like, it's only 10. I know. I mean, that seems like an overreaction. Plus, isn't Syracuse quarterback questionable, I believe?
Yeah, so this, anyway. I have this as off the board, but maybe the 10 is a late addition.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing online on my sports book, I bet, or my fake, whatever. It's -10, and I don't want to talk about it, but it should be higher than that. So, again, go ahead and wager on Notre Dame and lose, because that's what I do, so that's fine.
Question for you guys. If Syracuse beats Notre Dame, is Brian Kelly fired?
Yeah.
Not immediately, but possibly by the end of the year. Actually, I'm not sure. He can always blame injuries.
Welcome to 2016. We used to be able to figure out coaching, like, the way to the end of the year or this. It's totally insane nowadays. Like, the NBA, as Ryan has always said, the NBA mentality has made its way into other sports. And you know anything about the NBA, those coaches don't last so long. So people have the fastest trigger ever nowadays, so. If Notre Dame somehow bottoms out against a shitty Syracuse team, that might be it.
I have to say, Brian Kelly doesn't deserve to be fired no matter what his record is this season. He took them a few years back to a national championship game. They were a good team that year, but they weren't a national championship game quality team, and he took them there. And last year, I think they were 10-2 regular season, and their two losses, I think, were a combined 4 or 5 points, something like that. And again, they had like 7 starters out last season. So I think he's done well. They have so many guys injured. Their secondary is complete garbage this year. He hasn't
that's
done a great
injuries,
job this
though.
Year.
That's suspensions. That's his whole secondary riding around in a car with weed and guns. That falls on the coach.
I credit the coach because a lot of places wouldn't suspend those guys, and I think you have to. I mean, those guys might still be playing at LSU, other places. So I don't know what you do. Yeah. I guess I would give him this year whatever happens. If he really shits the bed this season and you start to see it creep into next season, then I think he's on the chopping block. But again, that's my logic, and the team could just fire him tomorrow. Like, who knows?
There you go.
All right.
Miami -7 at Georgia Tech. Dan, would you like to apologize for all the times we've made fun of Mark Richt and credit him for how great a job he's doing down at Miami?
I would not like to credit Mark Richt yet for anything. It's September in his first tenure. I would like to credit him for being consistently mediocre at Georgia. It was easy to predict, but too early to tell. He's got a good quarterback, so we'll see. I think he'll do decent this year, then next year be worse, and then the third year get better, and then just plateau out forever.
9-3 to the day he dies.
There it is. I was going to say 8-3, but thank you for correcting me that there's actually more college games. That's now 9-3. You are correct.
Well, it's usually 10-3 because he's usually able to win the Gator Bowl over Minnesota.
The Gator. Watch out.
I had a thought, and I totally forgot what it was. Oh, yeah, I know what it is. So we talk about my Phil Fulmer theory. My Phil Fulmer theory, I don't think we've talked about this in a couple years, but this is the idea that you have a coach like Phil Fulmer at Tennessee or like Lloyd Carr, late 90s in Michigan, who maybe wins one title or has them really competitive for a couple years, and then you're losing, say, three games where you're a good team, but you're not a championship caliber team, and the fans want you out. They want to win championships. So they dismiss a coach who's winning 9-10 games a year, and it turns out, in the case of Tennessee, that they actually get much worse, that Phil Fulmer was overachieving with what they had there, that Lloyd Carr was the best Michigan was going to do, at least for 8 to 10 years until they got Harbaugh. Is it possible that either LSU firing Les Miles or Georgia firing Mark Richt have actually created the next full Phil Fulmer theory, and that those teams, although we thought they were underachieving, were actually as good as they were going to be?
No, you got your schools wrong. You got Virginia Tech forcing out Beamer and South Carolina forcing out the old ball coach. We're going to find out that those two teams are shit, and they're going to stay shit for a while. I don't think either of those teams are going to be ranked in the next 3 to 5 years. And we're going to realize that those guys are absolute no-brainer Hall of Fame coaches. And I think those are the two schools that are going to suffer for the next 5 to 10 years. LSU's got too much talent, too much in-state talent. They're just never going to be shit.
Yes. That's correct.
It's hypothetical, exactly. Of course. You don't know who LSU is going to hire. If they get a guy like Tom Herman, they could be great. If they mess up this hire, they could be very mediocre for a very long time. And Georgia, although they've looked pretty bad this year, it's way too early to tell. But interesting to think about. Sometimes you think you're underachieving, and it turns out you're actually overachieving. So good luck to South Carolina. You will be horrible forever.
No,
Texas at Oklahoma State. Dan, this one's all you. Texas visits Oklahoma State, -3 in favor of Oklahoma State. This game's basically a toss-up.
Yeah, this is super hard. Everyone overreacted with Texas being Notre Dame. Now we know Notre Dame's not anything special. That would explain why Texas lost outright to Cal, which we kind of expected. So Texas, I think, is who we thought they were, so to speak, you know, and they're just an average team that's going to win 7 or 8 games. And it's pretty, and the Oklahoma State will probably win 8 or 9. They're just a little bit better. So, you know, spread's 2.5. It's a straight pick 'em in my book. Over under 71.5. That's right on. This game's a stay away.
All right. Next game, staying in the Big 12, Baylor minus 17 at Iowa State. Now, normally Iowa State has one or two games per year where a team goes in there and they either beat them or keep it close. They're very sneaky in that regard, but I think this year's Iowa State team might not be capable of that. And Baylor's looked not as good as they have been, but they still have an offense. So to me, if I have to take a side in this, I'm going with Baylor. But we were talking before, and Dan, it sounded like you disagree.
Well, overall, yes. I think they'll have some problems later in the year with competition getting, you know, harder and some injuries and stuff like that. But
Oh, yeah, totally agree. I just mean this game.
Exactly. But, yeah, like for this game, you're probably right. Iowa State's no good. It can be a weird, tricky place to play once in a while. I remember Oklahoma State losing there, which hurt them with Brandon Whedon. That Justin Blackman team cost them national title bid. But that being said, all these players are carryover from Art Briles. It's Art Briles system. As we get further away from that, every game, every, you know, month calendar, they'll get worse and worse. But for this game, you can probably take Baylor and be safe.
Ryan, anything to add?
Question. Isn't Briles' son still the offensive coordinator, though?
Yep.
Yes, I had assumed he was fired, and then I just saw him on the sidelines last week, and I was like, what's this dude doing here?
He's fine.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Sean Oakman's hanging out.
I'm sure he knew nothing about all this. I mean, I'm sure the head coach kept it away from the coordinator to keep that power line and, you know, checks and balances. No.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if Penn State still had Jay Paterno over on the sideline?
He might be still on the sideline.
He might be there hiding, but he's definitely not getting a paycheck.
Keep an eye out next Penn State home game for a guy with a really shady fake disguise. Could be Jay Paterno, just saying.
He's there in the like Guy Fawkes mask that people wear to Occupy Wall Street rallies.
Pretty much. Yep, that's the one.
Speaking of which, what a weird coincidence. This is the scandal segment. Minnesota at Penn State. Penn State 3-point favorite at home. Again, that's essentially a pick 'em. I don't really know how the Gophers are this year. I know that Penn State is decent against bad teams and bad against decent teams. So I don't know where Minnesota falls on that. I think this is a game that Penn State could win by 10 or they could lose outright. Spill it.
No feel for this game. I have not seen Minnesota play more than a couple of series maybe. And, I have seen Penn State a bit, and they're not good. So this one could be your Big Ten under bet, but that's about the only thing I would even look at. Other than that, I wouldn't touch this game.
Moving along then, Wisconsin at Michigan. Number 8 versus number 5, our second top 10 matchup of the week. I have to say, when Wisconsin played LSU and they beat them, I assumed LSU had a bad week or LSU just had no offense as they haven't recently, and that Wisconsin was overrated. But the more they play, it does seem like Wisconsin is back to the Wisconsin teams of several years ago, where they may not look impressive, but they seem to always get the win, and they seem to keep teams, they frustrate teams, they slow them down with their defense, their running game, Corey Clement's back. I think this will be a tighter game for Michigan than people expect. Michigan's a 10.5-point favorite, and I find that to be way too much. Also, I would just like to note, I don't know who put the schedule together, but this is Michigan's 5th straight home game to open the season. I checked their schedule. They have 8 home games this season and only 4 away games. So one of them's at the Horseshoe, but the other away games are like Rutgers, Illinois. Like, I don't know who made Michigan's schedule, but definitely it was somebody like a secret Michigan fan at the NCAA or at the Big Ten. And my phone's going off. So I'm going to hand this one off to Dan first and then Ryan, and I'm going to see what's going on.
I don't know. I don't have too much to say on this. What do you think, Ryan?
Well, you've mentioned this on the podcast for 2 weeks now, that at some point Michigan's going to lay an egg. Right, at some point we know it's going to happen.
I don't know about an egg, but I'm thinking a tough game.
This game's got a feel. Yeah, I mean, they're putting up 45, 50 with ease every week. They're not going to put up 45 with ease in this game. They're not. I would definitely check the weather. I think if this game is a rainy game, I'm taking Wisconsin. If the weather is going to be nice and clear, not too windy, I think that probably leans towards Michigan a little bit. But to me, I would probably go Wisconsin in the under and hook them.
Dan, I'm forcing you to pick this.
Okay, fine. I'm taking Wisconsin because they got wins over LSU, Michigan State, and I think Michigan's a little bit overrated. So I'll take the points and it being the only other real hard road game besides Ohio State.
All right, I have a bit of a sleeper pick. I don't know if sleeper pick is right, because sleeper kind of indicates an upset. This is a favorite pick, but it's a game that probably almost nobody's paying attention to except for some of the experts. I was doing some research. Troy is a 13.5-point favorite at Idaho. On covers.com, which we've discussed many times, which is maybe the best gambling site or definitely one of the better ones, 75 to 80% of the confidence votes are for Troy, which I think makes it the highest or second highest game of the week. Troy is 3-1 this season. Their only loss is to Clemson. You might remember that was week two. They kept it within 6 points. They lost 30-24. And everybody watched that game and said, hey, Clemson's really struggling. But I think Troy might actually be pretty good. Idaho, meanwhile, is 2-2. Their two wins over not so great teams. Their two losses were to the two Washington schools. They lost by 45 points to Washington and by 50 to Washington State. Washington, we know, is good. Washington State's, you know, a mediocre to above average team, and they beat them by 50. So it seems that Idaho is not very good. I think Troy is a pretty good pick in this spot, laying the 13.5, especially if you can get it under two touchdowns. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this or if this is something you've either even considered. No?
No, I didn't consider it, but I'll take it for it. I like it.
Well, I'm laying it on the line with Troy. All right, North Carolina at Florida State. Dan, you love North Carolina, and there's 7 All-Americans and 7 NFL draft picks and 7 wins. It's their 7-7-7 plan.
Yes. And also, they were 7-point favorites last week and did not cover the pit, and the trap of the week came in. But anyway, North Carolina is sneaky. They always put up points. They always seem like they're able to score over 35 all the time. Florida State's leaking some oil, so this looks like a good spot. But this is usually where North Carolina finds a way to crush your false hopes. So don't be fooled over their recent lot of points and comeback wins and crazy offense. They'll find a way to fall on their face this week. Take Florida State. Somehow they'll cover.
Ryan, do you have anything to add in that game?
No? Nailed it. Totally agree.
I agree. Yeah, I like the North Carolina 7-7-7 plan. We'll have 7 All-Americans, 7 NFL draft picks. We'll win 7 games a year with all that talent. Yep. And we will lose by 7 to every good team. By the way, Dan P's trap of the week and lock of the week are both now 3-1. So not bad. Right. Not bad at all.
Yeah,
and the lock of the week, yeah, you lost that one. That was the Baylor-Oklahoma State game that was referenced so crudely via Tupac earlier.
Yes.
I mean, you could have won that one. So you're doing pretty well, I have to say. Even the couple games you've lost have been pretty close ones.
We'll see what I got this week. Still to come. They're coming.
Right. Wake Forest at NC State. NC State minus 10.5. Dan, I've been riding Duke for the last 2 years. My boys, the Duke Blue Devils football. I am ditching them officially. I did this a couple weeks ago, but I'm making it official. My new smart school crush is Wake Forest.
Wow.
Take them.
Okay.
Take the points. Wake Forest covering, beating Indiana big time.
Okay.
I like them. They're going to cover.
I'm on for that.
They're not going to be great, but they're going to be better than people think this year.
I also like how you choose Wake Forest the week after Duke wins at Notre Dame to prove that You aren't just waiting for highs and lows of team. You're like, no, okay, Duke, I already made up my mind. I don't care about your win in South Bend. I'm done with you. Demon Deacons, 2016. Let's go.
Listen, I'll still continue to see Duke on the side, but Wake Forest is now my main crush, you know.
Duke's your side chick. Wow.
Duke is my side piece. Texas A&M minus 18 at Will Muschamp's South Carolina Gamecocks.
It's not going to be good.
It's going to be a slaughter.
A&M's starting to gain some confidence. They're a weird team. They got some absolute superstars who are going to go really high in the draft, and there's some motivation issues with some weird stuff, and someone's got this weird, crazy, complicated program. But that being said, South Carolina is bad. So look for them to cover. Again, look for a first half line in this one. Yep.
I like that it's a 4 o'clock game, though. That's important. If this was a noon Eastern kickoff, absolutely don't touch the game. But that it's a 4 o'clock game, I love that. That changes everything for me.
All right. I don't have a feel for that game. I guess I would take A&M. I mean, I'm not taking South Carolina, that's for sure. But I feel like A&M's got a lot of challenges, and so this might be a spot where they lay up a little bit. I would still, of course, take them if I had to pick. Another game I don't have a feel for against two pretty decent teams, Oklahoma minus 3.5 at TCU. Ryan, why don't you start this one off?
Trill, 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 trill. I'm just going to ride it till I die. I'm going down with the ship. TCU, screw Bob Stoops every week. I don't give a shit. Trill, trill, trill.
It's pretty much spot on. There's nothing else to say.
They're calling this one the Titanic versus the Hindenburg. Who will win?
Oh, boy.
Dan, do you care?
Yes, but Ryan said everything right.
All right. So I think what we'll do now, we have invited our friend George to come on the podcast and have a little discussion about Morrissey at the end of the show. But he just texted me and he's now available. And I see we got Tennessee next on the slate and he's a big fan. So we will take a short break. We'll loop in George and then we'll continue with the last few games and a discussion of the music of Morrissey and the Smiths. All right. Be right back. All right, everyone, we're back. We're back with Dan, Ryan, and we've got George Villali joining us. George, you're just in time for Tennessee at Georgia. Take a minute and tell us the importance as a Vols fan of that win over Florida.
I mean, that's huge. It's a 11-year streak that's finally broken. It's kind of almost felt like a curse at this point. Obviously the team still has a lot of issues. Still think they're overrated. But at the same time, though, that's a big win for them. That's a big morale win for the Vols. Overcoming that obstacle of Florida every year that's on the schedule. There's a big circle around that every year for everyone. Getting that win, though, was huge. And hopefully the momentum will carry on next couple weeks. A couple big games, Georgia, Texas A&M, and then a really big one in Knoxville on the 14th of October against Alabama.
Which you'll be attending.
I will be. I will be in attendance for that game wearing my creamsicle pants.
I hope you don't mind if I share what you just said before we started, but you took a gamble that you were going to wait until after Tennessee lost again to Florida to buy tickets, and you waited and you got screwed. Now tickets have like tripled in value.
It was the people I was going with obviously made a terrible choice to gamble on that. Actually, the guy that was buying them is an Alabama fan. So there you go. He was totally banking on the idea that the Vols were going to lose to Florida. And, they didn't. They won. And, as of right now, it's shaping up to be maybe one of the biggest SEC games of the year. But got 2 weeks between now and then to figure that out.
My general rule of thumb with sporting events and with concerts is if it's in town or if it's something you're driving to, I usually wait until the last minute because all the scalpers jack up the prices and then they usually fall down in the last day or two.
Oh, yeah.
If it's something I've got to fly to and I've booked hotels and all that, then I get it as far in advance as possible because you don't want to end up having that flight down there and like having to scalp or scrambling to get something at the last minute. That's when you can be in big trouble. So away games buy early, home games buy late.
Absolutely. I'm already flying to Tennessee that weekend. I'm not going to go watch it at a Buffalo Wild Wings. I'll tell you that.
No.
So give us your analysis and pick. Tennessee -4 at Georgia. Georgia was not good this last week. They haven't looked great, but they are a big-time program. They should be up for this game.
Big-time program. I mean, one way to look at it is obviously Tennessee is going to be carrying the momentum of last week. I mean, getting that monkey off their back, beating Florida. They got to be careful, though. They got to come into this game very serious. Obviously, you know, Georgia's still very, very much a, you know, a program that they could contend, obviously, with Tennessee. And, you know, don't want to see them just walk into this game thinking they just got it in the bag because they had a big win last week. You know, I'd like to see them cover. I think they're going to continue the momentum. That's what I'd like to see happen, obviously. But also, they might be looking ahead to Texas A&M the following week as well, and something that they have to be very careful with.
Yeah, Texas A&M and then Alabama. You would never think Georgia would be a look-ahead game, but with the really difficult schedule Tennessee has had, this might be their, you know, quote-unquote easiest game of this four-week stretch.
Very weird to say that Georgia would be that game, but it is shaping up to be that way.
So lay the points, take the points. I mean, you're not going to pick Georgia, obviously, but would you lay it or are you a little fearful you stay away?
I think I'd lay it right now. I think I'd lay it. I'm hoping that they're going to carry the momentum on this week and lay it to Georgia.
I can see after watching that game why people thought Tennessee was going to run away with the East. They definitely have the talent to do it. We are not huge fans of the coaching, or at least we haven't been recently. So it remains to be seen what happens, but they definitely have the talent to compete in the East and, you know, be one of those teams that at least tries to challenge Alabama. So I would love to see it happen. It's been way too long for Tennessee fans since they were considered, you know, a very good team.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's I think we were talking about that earlier this week, Tom, that, you know, it's one of those programs that, and I think Ryan brought it up earlier this week as well when we were discussing, you know, best places to coach. Tennessee's up there. Tennessee's one of the greatest programs in college football, you know. You got to get it back together. They got to get back on top. It's been too long.
Yeah, that discussion will have to wait for another time, but we were debating the 10 best or the few best places to coach, the best programs, the best jobs, and I think Tennessee is an underrated one. Huge program, huge stadium, 100,000 fans, and a pretty proud tradition, and they do have talent and recruiting base. So
absolutely.
When Butch Jones gets fired, when he goes 8-3 the rest of this year,
yeah,
it'll be a good job for someone else. All right.
Hey, maybe the hat, the Mad Hatter.
Perfect spot for him. That is an absolutely perfect spot for him. Yeah. They've already dealt with Bruce Pearl on the basketball side. They know lunatics. It's perfect.
Good point.
It's too much. There might be some sort of craziness quota that they would go over that they wouldn't be allowed to hire him.
Well, Pearl's at Auburn now, so we're good.
Oh, that's
true. Is that
true.
Where he is now?
All right.
Yep. Yeah.
So the door
is open. He's got
the
rivalry with Avery Johnson at Alabama.
Massachusetts born and raised Bruce Pearl, too. Shout out to Mass.
There will be no shout outs to Avery Johnson on this podcast.
Shout out Massachusetts.
That's right.
He's a lefty. George and I have to shout him out.
That's right.
Many listeners listen to this podcast for our incredible humor and our Massachusetts shout outs. But one thing we have is a bunch of stats that Dan P brings to the table. And he's got a lot of stats for this game. Dan, Kentucky goes to Alabama, and Alabama's a 35-point favorite, and you might just think, oh, this is just another one of those Alabama games. I'm just going to ignore this one. But you got some info for the people.
Yes. this is an extra awful Kentucky team, and this is a super elite Alabama team. Kentucky has played at Alabama 21 times in the history of college football. They're averaging 4.57 points per game and have been shut out 10 of 21 times playing in Alabama. That, like, is almost impossible. Like, if you look at, you know, stats and numbers and metrics, like, those numbers are absolutely impossible for two teams playing within the same conference, in the same geographic area, with coaches that know each other and players who know of each other and played against each other. Like, it's not like, you know, Michigan's playing against some, like, small school of 1,800 people you've never heard of. It's the University of Kentucky. It's beautiful. They got rolling hills and all that stuff. They got a basketball team that wins titles. Moral of the story is 4.5 points a game is what they're averaging at Alabama, and which means they score a touchdown and then they get shut out. And then they score a touchdown in the fourth quarter and get shut out. And they get shut out again. There was a 3 in there. There was a 14, I think. So that covers like 3 more shutouts to even it out after that. I mean, it's really crazy when you look at the numbers. So lock of the week this week, redemption from last week, 52-0 Alabama. I need you all to choose your exact shutout prediction. And I cannot wait to root for a shutout in this game. It's all I really care about the whole weekend. I'd rather watch for the shutout of this than Louisville Clemson. But anyway, I need your exact shutout scores beginning with George, please.
Oh, man. You know, that sounds about right. That's an incredible stat and metric, like you said. I mean, 4 points a game. That's bad. And to think that this was a school that I believe Bear Bryant actually coached at Kentucky at one point. You know what I mean? So we're not talking about an actual program that doesn't have any history. Bear Bryant coached there. What the hell? But anyways, I mean, it's whew. Dan goes 52. I'll go a little bit under that. I'm going to say 48-0. They might take their foot off the gas after, like, 42-0 at halftime.
Okay. So,
who knows?
All right. Ryan, you're up next.
Let's see. I really like that 52. That's a good number. I was thinking 51 just to be an asshole, but I'm going to see last week they won 38-0, right? Let's add one touchdown onto that and call it 45-0.
All right, Mr. Z. This is going to turn into like the best episode of The Price is Right ever.
Yeah.
You cannot wager 1-0. That is not an acceptable score. It doesn't work in football. So please give me your exact shutout score.
So I guess I have to choose a shutout because I was going to take a slightly different score. My pick was going to be 55-2 with Alabama walking a punt out of the back of the end zone because they were pinned too deep and giving up the 2 at the end of the game. But I guess since I can't take that, I'm going to take 55-0.
Okay. 55, 52, 48, 45. Remember those numbers. I cannot wait for this Saturday. That's going to be the best part of this weekend. Mark it down.
Spillet, you love to talk about Bob Poops, a.k.a. Bob Stoops. But we should mention that they actually have the lesser of the Stoops at Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Poops.
It's a perfect storm. I mean, it's unbelievable. You got the Stoops. You got the history. You got Alabama ranked number 1. What else do you want? Like, this is going to be a shutout. I was looking at team points. They're not listed for Kentucky or Alabama yet. But as soon as it pops up, I'll be sure to let you guys know. I cannot wait to see this number. 1.5? It's going to be 1.5. Can you believe that? Team points.
The nice thing about having a Stoops is Kentucky, you don't have to worry about losing a big game because – Kentucky, by its nature, will never be in a big game. So you get off easy there. Moving along, Missouri at LSU. The Ed Orgeron, which my computer always autocorrects to Ed Oregon.
Touch the rope.
All right. We're going to get to that in a second. This is a 13.5 point line. How the hell are they favored by 13.5 over anybody when they can't even win with their actual head coach who's trained with them. Take the points all day in this. And now, George, please explain touch the rope to everyone.
Actually, Dan would probably better explain this. I actually got it from Dan, but it's unbelievable. Apparently, it refers to we're all going and pulling in the same direction. And he wanted all the players to come into the locker room and touch a rope.
This is Eddie O.
Eddie O. Which Eddie O, to be honest with you, is probably the greatest interim head coach of all time, by far. Anyways, but the discussion was he was supposed to lay some sort of rope out, and everyone was to touch this rope to signify that they're going and all pulling in the same direction. So many jokes can come out of that.
Touch the rope.
Touch the rope. You got to just, you know, just touch it. Don't look at it.
LSU 2016, touch the rope.
Yep. 2017. Rope.
The game day signs are going to be fantastic.
It's worth noting that now in the two biggest current powerhouse programs in the SEC, you now have the influence of Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, and now Ed Orgeron. USC failed coaches are taking over the SEC West.
This sounds like the discussion you guys used to have about the MAC in 2022, when you would be like, Kiffin, yeah, Orgeron, Kent State.
It's just going to be all these guys.
It's
Franklin,
happening in the SEC.
Pelini,
Kelly.
Oh yeah,
Hope.
It's 100%. This year's Alabama versus LSU, Orgeron versus Kiffin and Sarkisian, is going to be 2022 Central Michigan versus Toledo.
Yep.
Can't wait. It's going to be amazing.
Kiffin, Franklin, Orgeron. It's Maction Tuesday night on ESPN2.
Mm-hmm. Sarkisian. Leech. Like, oh.
Get the shit.
All right. Yeah, we haven't done this year. So who are our top five MAC 2022 coaches?
Ooh. Okay. To qualify to be a MAC coach, you cannot be a coach from the past. You have to be currently employed this year.
You have to be a big time coach or assistant coach, a big name now that will be coaching a MAC team in 2022.
Okay, sure.
I.e. Bo Pelini.
All right. Holgorsen.
He's a perfect fit.
Rodriguez. He's a good one.
He's a good fit too.
Brian Kelly.
Brian Kelly will definitely be there. Who else is going to make their way to the MAC for some great MACtion? Oh boy. Stoops. There you go. Strong. It's the way it is.
Can I throw one out there? Briles.
Oh, boy.
Ooh.
Holgorsen, Briles. It's Toledo versus Western Michigan. Dixon.
That is correct, Ryan. University of Arizona, new head coach next year, Art Briles. No one gives a shit. It's Arizona. They're a red state. No one gives a flying fuck about any of that stuff. They just want to win football games. Trust me. He's coming.
It's the best place for him. It's a basketball school. No one's going to give a shit. It's too perfect. Soft.
No one cares. All right,
we're going completely off the rails, but one of you, give me a prediction of how the rest of the season plays out for LSU in the Eddie O era.
I think it's going to play out exactly how it would have with Les. They're going to win 7 or 8 games. They'll go to a bowl game where they play an inferior talent. They'll actually say, maybe we should try this week. They'll whip somebody like 31-10 in like the Capital One December 30th game.
Oh, I have a prediction. I think Tennessee has outperformed. So we had said it was going to be Tennessee, Iowa, January 1st, 11 a.m. Outback Bowl. I'm now saying December 29th, Iowa versus LSU rematch in the Tax Slayer Bowl.
Ooh. Tax Slayer Bowl.
Ed Orgeron and LSU will be slaying some taxes this December.
Yeah, he is. Multiple income sources, USC. He's got a lot of tax issues, so he's a perfect representation of Tax Slayer.
I think the let's not forget the LSU starting or Les Miles starting at Michigan State. That Citrus Bowl, LSU, Michigan State, the Les Miles game. He's going to be there. Two teams he coached at. That's going to be perfect.
That's not a bad call.
By the way, if the Tax Slayer Bowl isn't brought to you by The Accountant starring Ben Affleck, I'm going to be very disappointed.
What the hell is that movie about?
I don't know. Is he just an accountant that murders people? That's as far as I can tell.
Beautiful Mind. It's The Beautiful Mind meets a Jason Statham movie.
Mm. Well said. Exactly.
All I want to see is one good accountant-based catchphrase as he like kills somebody. So I want him to say like, "I'll balance the books," and then hit a guy in the face with a book.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed the team.
You almost think Hollywood at this point is basically pulling things out of a hat. They're like, okay, what profession is he going to be? An accountant. What is he going to do? He's an assassin. Does that make any sense?
Who greenlit that?
Who greenlit that?
George, you've served a lot of time as a public defender. How would a public defender turned action hero best murder somebody, and what would your catchphrase be?
Oh, man. It's putting me on the spot there.
You know what? Think about that one. Everybody think about your current job and what your action hero catchphrase would be.
I think Dan's got one here.
Dan's got one.
I got one for George, like, "You have the right to remain silent forever," or something like that.
Oh, yeah, as you break their, like, smash their jaw.
Yeah, forever. Or something. Yep. For, you know. Close enough. That's all I got. I was just thinking for George.
I like it.
All right, let's do the Out West games, and then we'll think of catchphrases for me as a web designer. Utah at Cal -1.5 in a surprising line. Arizona at UCLA -13.5. Oregon at Washington State. Oregon, I have it written down as Oregon's a 2.5-point favorite. Do I have that backwards? Somebody's a 2.5-point favorite.
Oregon -1.5 right now.
Okay. And then Arizona State, well, we'll get to that one. So those first three, Dan, Ryan, what do you think? Ryan, why don't you take these? Utah, Cal, Arizona, UCLA, Oregon, Washington State.
All right. Well, we'll start with Oregon, Washington State, because that's probably the least interesting game, even though, an overplay is definitely there. Nothing better for you East Coast gamblers than to drop an awesome number on maybe about 79.5 and just wake up the next day and see that it went to 97. It's going to be great. So that's a good one to bet. What were the other games you wanted me to?
Arizona at Cal and Arizona at UCLA.
Oh, Arizona, UCLA. No. You can go ahead and lay the two touchdowns. Arizona sucks. We already said it. Rich Rod's getting fired. Briles, bring him in. That's an easy one. Rosen, after the Stanford defense last week, this is going to feel like playing a JV team, which it kind of is. All right. And then the other game was the
other is Utah at Cal. You proudly predicted the Utah victory last week against USC.
I don't get that number. I just don't get that number. Utah is a legitimate team. They're a ranked team. They're deservingly ranked. This something seems fishy, and this is one of those games that I feel really, really strongly about. And then I step back and go, Vegas doesn't screw this shit up. There's a reason this number is what it is. I don't know what. So for me, this is a total stay away, but I really want to watch it, 'cause I really want to watch Utah play one more time.
Dan, anything to add about those three games before we move to the next one?
Not really so much. Over in Oregon, Washington State, probably my favorite play of all those three.
All right. I agree with Ryan on the Utah-Cal line. Something seems fishy. I haven't done my research, so I don't know what it is. But Vegas is always right, so you need to stay away. All right, Dan. Arizona State at USC. USC is a 10-point favorite. What do you think, Dan? Any surprises for us?
I do. This is an interesting one. You know, USC at home in the Coliseum, -10 points. Sounds pretty normal. Wait, what's this? Is Corey Feldman, are you here? What is this? Corey Feldman.
I don't think that's coming through very loud over the speakers. Our listeners might not be able to hear it.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Explain anyway, what this is and why it's relevant.
Draft of the week was jacked by Corey Feldman's performance on the Today Show. I don't know if that was like an internet thing he was going for, performance art or modern art or just art. I don't know, but that's the weirdest thing I've ever seen in the history of music. I'm not joking. So watch that. I'd watch that after you bet Arizona State plus 10 against USC. Either way, it's better to watch that after. But Arizona State's undefeated somehow, and they just keep winning, and they find a way, and they play these teams that are like okay, good, and they just each week they just score a bunch of points, and people around here are kind of like, yeah, they're no good, they'll lose eventually. But then you like, you know, I hear the coaches' interviews driving around. I listen to a lot of AM radio, and these guys are really excited. And for an undefeated team to get 10 points when you know the other team's a total fucking train wreck, I'll take the 10. So, trap of the week, Arizona State. Why not?
All right. I have on my list, we don't need to pick this game, but Nevada minus 3.5 at Hawaii. I just want to point out this is a midnight Eastern start time.
Oh, good.
This game will be wrapping up about 6 a.m. my time. So I look forward as I wake up with my baby and I sit down for breakfast to give her a bottle, catching the late third to fourth quarter. Should
That's
be a
right.
fun one. I actually feel good, especially since this is a game I don't care about. I do think there should be games for late night, like night owls and especially late night West Coast people. Like living on the West Coast, that's the one thing. You can't be at the bar and see the weird game that is like 47-42 and it's last call and you're like, hang on, as you mentioned before, Dan. But it seems like this year they keep pushing games later and later, and this has been a trend. So I'm glad for the midnight start time. I'm looking forward to the first 4 a.m. Eastern start time game, which should be happening by next year. Keep it up. Little something for the night owls.
That's right. I love it.
Louisville at Clemson. Clemson is a 2.5-point favorite. This is the game of the week. Number 3 and number 4 face off. One of the most difficult games in my mind to pick this week and maybe of the whole season. Louisville's just been blowing teams out of the water. Clemson has not been as powerful as they looked last year, but they're starting to wake up. And I think a lot of people are going to jump on Louisville with these points, but I'm really not so sure. So who wants to take it? Dan.
Yeah, I'll start on this one. Before the season started, this line was Clemson minus 10. When the line opened Sunday morning last week at the Wynn, it opened as Clemson minus 3 points. It's moved a full 5.5 more points since Saturday. It's now Louisville all the way minus 2.5 now. That's an incredible amount of line movement. And I know it's the Heisman Trophy favorite, and they've looked so amazing, and yada, yada. This is Clemson. This is a night game. This is that home stadium that's unbelievable. This is their quarterback last year, who everyone thought after the national title game is going number one in the NFL draft the following year, no matter what. It doesn't matter. Maybe they've been mailing in a couple games. I'm not sure. I'm not saying wager on Clemson. But if you do bet this game, I think you'd have to be a crazy man to bet Louisville, knowing how much Las Vegas stands to lose if Louisville covers the spread. That's a ton of points. So keep that in mind. I'm leaning Clemson. I probably will pull the trigger. I haven't really looked at the total, to be honest with you. I just don't want to, you know, say it's a blind over. But leaning Clemson, that stadium, that quarterback, that coach, that's too tough.
I think the over is a dangerous play in this one. I don't know what it is either, but these teams both have good defenses, and I think it would be foolish to just assume that they're both going to score a ton of points in a huge big-time night game with good defenses, with so much on the line, with nerves. I'm staying away. I look forward to this game. It's going to be great to watch. I feel like this is the game where you bet it, and if you lose, no matter what happens, you're going to feel stupid. If you bet Louisville and Clemson wins, well, of course, they were in the championship game last year. Why would I not bet on them? And if you vice versa, if Louisville wins big and you bet Clemson, you're going to be like, well, fuck, I'm an idiot. Why did I bet against this guy who scored like 100 touchdowns already this season? So I think it's a no-win situation. I would check the over just to see if it comes in low by game time, but I think it's a total stay away. Let's go to Ryan. I feel like a game show host now when we have four people and I've got to be like, let's go over to Ryan.
Thanks, Tom. Actually, I'm going to be the one guy I think that's going to lean Louisville in this game. I just think, like you said, that the Lamar Jackson is just ridiculous. I mean, 25 touchdowns in four games. And the fact that he's got 13 passing and 12 rushing, the balance, the way that he can keep a defense on its heels, because you just don't know what's the worst death. You know, I think this is one of those games where Clemson's going to really try to take away that run, and we're going to see Lamar Jackson really air it out. And I think this is a game that's going to end 38-33 Louisville.
George?
I mean, this is going to be a game that you're just going to, at least for me, it's a stay away, but it's going to be a game that you're just going to be looking at quarterback play the entire time. It's going to be a quarterback festival. Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, I mean, two of the most dynamic guys in the game right now. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. The looks like the over-under right now is at 69. That's what I'm seeing it at right now. I would love to see the offenses light it up here. I mean, I almost think that the over is probably the play, if there's going to be one. But then again, you know, it remains to be seen. But either way, I'm going to have a lot of fun watching these two quarterbacks go at it.
Yeah.
So we've got one Clemson, one Louisville, George with the over, and then me, a total pansy, staying away from everything. So thanks, everyone, for listening to Take the Points. You've learned nothing and accomplished nothing.
Sounds about right.
Actually, we're not done. So that's all of the games. Unless anyone has anything to add about a game we didn't mention or any of the teams we have talked about, I think it's time to move on to a tribute to Morrissey and the Smiths. I'm going to let Dan Partridge kick this off, and then we're going to end with action movie quotes from each of our real jobs, and then we'll call it a night. But Dan, tell the people why we were talking about Morrissey, and then I'll let you three go off on whatever tangents you'd like.
We were talking about Morrissey because we were talking about a show that me and George once saw where we went to see Morrissey, and his voice went out after a few songs, but that's how it came up. At that show and at all of his shows, there is no meat to be had in terms of, well, there's meat to be had, but it's a different kind. In terms of vendor meat, that is not available. Cheese pizzas, grilled cheese, that's it. So, but, you know, all kidding aside, Smiths are probably the best ever in terms of bands, great songwriting, best lyrics ever. Morrissey's really quirky and funny, a lot of funny stories over the years. If to us growing up, Oasis was the 90s band with Noel being the funny guy, it's the equivalent of the 80s, the Smiths with the great songwriting, same hometown, and Morrissey being the funny guy, and just some epic quotes. It's funny because, you know, I mean, all of us were too young to like pick up on any of this stuff as it happened. Plus, it happened in England and not on the internet in the 80s. So, but now that we look back, there's so many great stories. And the one thing I will say about the Smiths is if you meet somebody who likes the Smiths, you really don't need to ask any other questions. Like, if you just have a Smiths shirt on and they're like, nice shirt, you're like, okay, you can come into my home. I don't think you're going to harm me. Like, that's kind of the thought process that goes through your head. I've probably gotten more compliments on my vintage Smith shirt I got in New York 15 years ago more than any other shirt I wear, and it sucks. I lost too much weight and it's too big, but I don't give a fuck and I still wear it once every 2 months. I look ridiculous, but who cares? Smiths are amazing, really funny. I'd like to thank George for getting me into him, and he knows more than I ever will about both of the band and Morrissey, but so good. Take it away, George.
I mean, you said it best right there. You know, I think the Smiths are one of the most underrated bands, maybe, of all time. You know, they were around in a span of the mid-80s, you know, basically like 84 to like 87, you know. You know, in those short years, they put out such a huge amount of songs that never really got airplay in the United States, but got a lot of play and a lot of, you know, attention in the UK. But just looking back on a lot of their songs, I mean, you know, another thing we were, I think another reason why this came up, I believe it's the, Dan, what is it, 27th anniversary of...
29th anniversary 29th of the last Smiths album, yes.
Of Strange Ways. Strange Ways, Here We Come, which we were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, it's so hard to pick your favorite Smiths album because just all of Morrissey's lyrics from beginning to end, he's always misconstrued as being a sad, mopey, depressed guy, but the reality is that he's hilarious, and people don't realize the humor that is actually in all these songs, the humor that is actually in all his lyrics. They take it at face value, and they're not smart enough to realize that they're all just unbelievably witty and humorous. But anyways, that's my 2 cents.
Good stuff.
Ryan?
I mean, there's nothing I can add that these two guys haven't already said. I'll just add in that I've had the honor of spending time in Manchester, England. So I actually got to walk around the streets and see the lads club and all that good stuff. And then I also am a vegetarian like Moz. So that's kind of my addition to this conversation, is that I've been to where they're from, and I also am a vegetarian. And I will recommend, even if you're not a huge Smiths fan, if you really want to have just an amazing, amazing read, the Morrissey autobiography is phenomenal. It's so good. The only thing I will warn you is there's no chapters. So it's a little heavy to get through big chunks at a time. You got to break it up.
Joke's on you.
But yeah, there's no good spots to stop. It's just a running thought of his life. But it's unbelievably well written. The prose is just like his lyrics. The humor is just like his lyrics, like George said. It's fantastic. I pride myself on reading a lot of autobiographies of musicians, like a lot. And that is definitely one of the top maybe 4 or 5 ones that I've read. With the other ones being probably the best one I've ever read was the Bob Dylan Chronicles Volume 1. And then after that, I'd say the Brian Wilson autobiography was phenomenal. And then probably Morrissey, and the Greg Allman one was excellent too.
Oh.
One quick story about the publishing of that book, which is kind of actually hilarious. Morrissey refused to publish the book for years. He actually had it basically done for the last 15, 10, maybe 15 years. He refused to publish it unless it went under the Penguin Classics line of books, which basically is only reserved for classic books like, you know, Oscar Wilde or Charles Dickens or, you know, authors of that nature. He would not release the book until they actually put it under that umbrella of books. And just to go to show you how hilarious he can be.
And order the UK version. Don't order the US version of the book. You have to order the UK version, otherwise you're going to miss like 50 pages.
Yeah, there's weirdly, there's a bunch of stuff that was taken out in the US version.
I think that's probably a good spot to end. I have nothing I can say that wasn't said beautifully by all of you. I will add that I was with Dan on his New York City trip to buy those band t-shirts. And in addition to that, I bought a Stroke shirt. And then I can't remember who it was, but one of us bought a Blink-182 Take Off Your Pants and Jacket t-shirt. Which shows that if you think we're, you know, high and mighty about our music, we also like stupid things as well, which anyone who's listened to this podcast knows already.
Okay. Like you said on Twitter today, We may have liked a couple early Blink tunes, but by the 2000s, it was over. So I did not wear that shirt. I know the shirt you're talking about, but that's on somebody else. I'm going to make that clear. And I do like Josie still for what it's worth. I will admit them. I did not own the shirt. I do like Josie. I want to make that clear for anyone listening. Thank you.
I would like to end with our the accountant style. I was thinking about this while you guys were talking. Not that I wasn't listening, but I came up with a good one for Dan working at a restaurant. This would be his action hero quote. Dan, yours would be take a silver platter, like a Downton Abbey style one, smash someone over the head, and then as they're, you know, dead on the floor, you look at them and go, "Gratuity not included."
There you go. I like that. Very good.
So we've got one for George. I was trying to think of a good lacrosse-based one for Ryan, but I couldn't come up with anything. And it's up to you guys to think of one for me, you know, working in web.
Okay. You work in web, which I'm guessing isn't that exciting all the time, so you got to make some coffee. So what you could do is grab a coffee pot and hit him and kill him and say, "You've been infiltrated." Does that work? Is that close enough? I don't know. Hey, I'm trying on the fly. That was 4 seconds you gave me to come up with that. That's not half bad.
I like you got control alt deleted.
Oh.
Oh.
Dan, I'm sorry, but I got to give that one to Ryan for sure.
Yeah, he wins. That's not close.
All right, who's got one for Ryan?
Let's see, let's take a look. His is really hard.
Yeah, it's tough.
You're on the bench permanently.
I like it. All right, let's end there. TakeThePoints.net is our website. We are on Stitcher and iTunes. I encourage anyone, if they like our podcast or even if they hate it, go to iTunes and leave us a review. A lot of people say leave us a review, you know, because they want to get boosted up in the ratings and they want more people to find it. I just want funny reviews. If you think this show is complete dog shit, go ahead and say it. I don't care if we get hurt in the ratings or get helped. I just want to see some funny stuff. And our quest to find the perfect advertising venue for Take the Points continues. I will investigate the Syracuse New Times in a few weeks when I go up there. We will get some funny guerrilla-style ads going. But until then... Does anyone have anything else to add?
Yes, real quick. That's a great idea, Z. We need to do a multi-city guerrilla campaign and then start a Twitter thing. And like 4 people will follow it, but they'll be really funny. Just say it to everyone we know. They'll be like, "Why is there a Take the Points Takeover Tuesday going on in Worcester?" And there's George at the corner handing out flyers on the whatever college that was. What, Western PI or whatever? Yeah, right there. So anyway,
Worcester Polytechnic, WPI.
That's the one. You'll be down there.
Holy cross.
TakeThePoints.net.
So one thing you could do, I don't know if people know this, but a lot of people, including one presidential candidate, uses a lot of hired Twitter people who they basically hire to, anytime there's something posted about them, you come on there and just talk a bunch of shit and stir things up and create a bunch of like evil memes against your opponent. I think we need to pick a rival podcast and we need to hire some like Russian Twitter users to just every time they post to just come out and be like, "You suck. You're the worst. Take the points rules." That's what I'm thinking. Tupac Biggie style feud.
We'll get Gerald Broflovsky on the case.
I'll get Igor and his boys on it. We're good. Don't worry.
It'd basically be our version of Baba Booey.
Yes, exactly.
So we're going to get some local news advertisements and we're going to start a feud with another unsuccessful podcast to be determined. So until then, iTunes, Stitcher, TakeThePoints.net. We got to wrap this up because we've gone completely off the rails. But thank you to Dan, as always, and to Ryan and George for joining us. And thanks to everybody for listening. And we'll see you next week. That's the point.